On the topic of home management, I wish there was a magic answer. I sure don't have it. But as we discuss various things this morning, maybe something that I bring out will spark something that you've been thinking about, and it will be helpful to you. So let's pause just for prayer, and then we'll start our discussion. Shirley Graham, would you lead for us?
Heavenly Father, we're so thankful for this time together this morning, for the privilege of having Helen with us to share with us her life. Pray that you would be with her and guide her as to the words that you would have her give us today to meet each of our needs. Pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.
All of our circumstances in our homes are so varied. Our husband's position, our number of children, the ages of children, the amount of entertaining, and so on. However, we all do have some common basic denominators. We have to eat, we have to keep the house clean, there's a certain amount of commuting with the children, our husband's demands on our time, and so forth. What I have found through the years that relieves somewhat the frustrations that we find pressuring us is if we know our priorities, then when these numerous requests pile in on us, well, we make our decisions accordingly. And we don't make the wrong decisions. That now is where I have found Proverbs 31 so helpful. And as I mentioned, particularly in the Amplified, is the translation that has helped me the most in understanding somewhat what the Lord has in mind from a woman who is following him. So let's read this together. And we'll start at verse 10. Now there's some footnotes as we go along. And I'll ask us to read some of them. So let's start here with you, fellows, and then we'll just go around, starting with verse 10.
That would be number 10 on this sheet?
Mm-hmm. That's verse 10.
Mm-hmm. A capable, intelligent, and virtuous woman, who is he who can find her? She is far more precious than jewels, and her value is far above rubies or pearls.
Okay, Shirley, I'll have you read the footnote too then.
Most unfortunately, this description of God's ideal woman is usually confined in readers' minds merely to its literal sense. Her ability as a homemaker, as was Martha of Bethany, but it is obvious that far more than that is meant. When the summary of what makes her price far above rubies is given, verse 30, it is her spiritual life only that is mentioned. One can almost hear the voice of Jesus in Luke 10:42, saying, Mary has chosen that good portion, which shall not be taken from her. Notice how each of the verses that follow suggests a spiritual meaning.
Okay, and then Dolores, I'll have you read number 3 footnote on the first page.
Ruby-like people are valuable according to whether they are man-made or God-made, and how perfected or the workmanship on them is. An extremely rare 8-carat God-made ruby may sell for 8,000 or about 2,857 pounds sterling or more, while a man-made ruby may sell for less than $20 or 7 pounds a carat. And so perfect is the workmanship on the imitation that rarely can anyone but an expert detect the difference. But God cannot be deceived. besides the rare person here described who is the product of his wisdom and skill, the self-made counterfeit must appear to him very cheap indeed.
That's descriptive, isn't it? Okay, Patty, verse 11 then.
The heart of her husband trusts in her confidently and relies on and believes in her safely, so that he has no lack of honest pain or need for dishonest spoil.
Next.
She will comfort, encourage, and do him only good as long as there is life within her. She seeks out the wool and flax of which righteous character is made, and works with willing hands to develop it.
She's like the merchant ships loaded with foodstuffs. She brings her household spiritual food from a far country.
She rises while yet it is night and gets spiritual food for her household and assigns her maids their tasks.
She considers a new field of interest or activity before she buys or accepts it, expanding prudently and not courting neglect of her present duties by assuming others. With her saving of time and strength, she plants fruitful vines in her vineyard.
Isn't it good in there? And not courting neglect of her present duties by assuming new ones. Okay?
She girds herself with strength, spiritual, mental, and physical fitness for her God-given task, and makes her arms strong and firm.
She tastes and sees that her gain from work with and for God is good. Her lamp of faith and dependence upon God goes not out, but full of the oil of His Spirit, it burns on continually through the night of trouble, privation of sorrow, warning away such robbers as fear, doubt, and distrust.
She lays her hands to her spindle, spinning threads of which character is made, and her hands hold over the staff, making yarn to weave into lines, pleasing to God.
She opens her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her filled hands to the needy, whether in body, mind, or spirit.
She fears not the snow of temptation or false teaching for her family, for all her household are doubly clothed in the scarlet of redemption.
She makes for herself coverlets, cushions, and rugs of tapestry. Her clothing is of fine linen, pure white and fine, and of purple, such as that of which the clothing of the priests and the hallowed cloths of the temple are made.
Her husband is known in the city's gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes the fine linen garment and leads others to buy them. She delivers to the merchant girls of sashes that free women for service.
She rejoices in the people, and whether they are time to come, forms and changes them in their own ways.
She opens her mouth with skillful and godly wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness, giving counsel and instruction.
She looks well to how things go in her household, and the bread of idleness, of gossip, discontent, and self-pity, she will not eat.
Her children rise up and call her blessed, happy, fortunate, and to be envied. And her husband boasts of and praises her, saying,
many daughters have done virtuously, nobly, and well with a strength of character that is steadfast in goodness, but you excel them all.
Okay, let's have Phyllis and Shirley read now the last two paragraphs on the page, the footnotes.
Many daughters have done nobly and well, but you excel them all. This is a very great deal to be recorded of her, a woman in private life. It means she had done more than Miriam, the leader of the nation's women in praise to God, Deborah, the patriotic military advisor, Huldah, the woman who revealed God's secret message to national leaders, Ruth, the woman of constancy, Hannah, the ideal mother, the Shunammite, the hospitable woman, and even more than Queen Esther, the woman who risked sacrificing her life for her people.
In what way did she excel them all? In her spiritual and practical devotion to God, which permeated every area and relationship of her life. All seven of the Christian virtues are there, like colored threads in a tapestry. Her secret, which is open to everyone, is the Holy Spirit's climax of the story and of this book. In verse 30, that reverent and worshipful fear of the Lord, which is the beginning and principal part of wisdom, is given the full responsibility for a life which is valued by God and her husband as far above rubies or pearls.
Okay. So let's list some things that you think stand out as priorities in this woman's life. What would you say would be behind or at the top of her list? Pardon?
God.
All right, devotion to God. What would be next in her life, do you feel?
Her husband.
Her husband, all right. And then? Children?
Could you call it domestic responsibilities?
Yes, let's call it her home. One more that I feel is there.
Her attention to others.
All right. Okay. Should we could call it we could call it outside ministry. How would that be? One thing that plagues us as American wives, most of us worked before we were married, and so we come into marriage from a job where the pressure was on us in the outside world and carries over to us to our homes, and that if we are basically production-minded. As a secretary, we felt, well, if we could get so many letters out, you know, we were doing a good job that day, or in whatever capacity we worked. And this carries over to our homes, where we feel, well, if I get the house clean today and the ironing done and bread baked, well, then I've had a good day. But is that the Lord's idea? True, He wants us to be organized and to work at getting our work done, I'm sure, rather than go into complete chaos. But is it so much, basically, with the Lord, is what we get done, or did we glorify Him in the activities of the day, in the interruptions that came to us? Which, if we have our devotion to the Lord in mind, our husband as our priority, and our children as our priority, well then, the work and the other demands, if they didn't get done, see what I mean? They sort of, it falls into place. Because it isn't what we get done during the day that determines whether or not we had a successful day. But did we glorify the Lord in what He brought our way that day? Any questions? It might be a day completely full of interruptions. The wash machine might break down on Monday when you do your wash, etc., etc. But that doesn't need to throw us But at the same time, we do find that living takes up so much of our time, even in modern America, even with our lovely homes. And we do need to have our time somewhat scheduled. Now, maybe all of you operate on schedules already, but just let me go over simply how to basically make out a schedule. What would be some of the things during the week? Say we want to make out a weekly schedule. What would be some of the things that we are involved in during a week that would be weekly chores?
Washing and
ironing.
Meal preparation.
All right. Well, that's just sort of everyday sort of thing.
Cleaning.
What else is there that you sort of operate on a weekly basis? All right. Your set things, like your children's obligations and so forth. Your Sunday school lesson, for instance. Do many of you teach or attend? All right, maybe that wouldn't be too practical. Are many of you in Bible study? All right, well then this is something that you'd want to include during your week, Bible study.
If you do baking or something like this.
Mm-hmm. Baking cookies. That's usually a weekly chore. Okay. Let's put down clean the stove, too. Usually it has to be put in there. Well, then let's take our days of the week. Let's start out with Monday. And we look at our list. Now, what would work out best for me to do on Monday? What do you think would be a good Monday? Wash? Okay. Monday, wash. And what if we said light cleaning? Tuesday?
Bible study.
Now, it's good, say, if you have a Sunday school lesson to prepare for or a Bible study, plan on it in your schedule, say, a day or a couple days before it's due. Because if your Bible study was on Wednesday evening, well, if your Tuesday was interrupted, then you'd still have Wednesday to try to work it in. And then just go down the line. Wednesday, pick out a couple items, put it under Wednesday, and so on. And make your schedule work for you, not you working for your schedule, or we will end up possibly even more frustrated than when we began. One of the things that I find helpful in living are these things called 3x5s. And I know I couldn't live without. I have them in the kitchen by the phone. I have them in my top dresser drawer. I have them in the other phone extension in the office. And what I use them for is, say someone calls and children are invited somewhere. So I'll put Tuesday night, whatever it is, say program. Another phone call comes. There's going to be a shower, and I need to bring some cookies. Okay, Tuesday night, 3 dozen cookies. Well, then, I also operate off a calendar. And then, when I get to my room, well, then I write down these things on my calendar. But I don't carry my, you know, I don't have a calendar, you know, all around the house, wherever I'm working or wherever the phone happens to be. So then I write down on my calendar and I toss my 3x5 with great delight. Another thing I use these handy little lists for is that I always start my day the night before. Say today is Friday, so tomorrow is Saturday. So I'll just spend maybe a minute or a couple minutes thinking through now. Saturday, what? Oh yes, I still haven't cleaned out the bathroom. So I'll write down clean bathroom. And I want to make a coffee cake for Sunday morning. Coffee cake. So when Saturday morning comes, I already know pretty much what I'm going to be doing. And then I use them for my dinner menu for the day. Say, as I'm doing the breakfast dishes, I'm thinking, well, now what meat do I need to take out for tonight? And so I'll start writing, okay, well, I'll have stew tonight. Stew with carrots, potatoes, celery, onion. And maybe that's all I'll write down. Well, then I'll think, well, now I need a salad and a dessert. As I keep on working, well, then that'll come to my mind. Then what else I want to have. So then I just write down tossed salad and cake with ice cream. So I've got my dinner menu in mind for the day, and it's written out where I don't know what was I thinking about for dinner. And you'll find a lot of other uses for them, too. One little saying I've picked up throughout the years, and it's been very helpful, is a place for everything and everything in its place. Now, in all our homes, there are definite trouble areas. We have several. One, the worst one, is the counter in the kitchen. It collects absolutely everything. And the other one in most of our homes is the counter in the bathroom. And it could be also under the sink, which is hard to get cleaned out. But we need to work on our trouble areas and work with the other members of our family, possibly like on the kitchen counter. You know, that, well, when you come home from school, your lunchbox goes over there in the sink, not on the kitchen counter, and so on. But I think that working with our family, particularly our children, on picking up and working on it ourselves really does cut down our work. For instance, as a single person, I was in homes where at snack time they would let the children take a cookie out of the cookie jar and walk around the house eating their cookie. Well, I saw that and I said to myself, well, now when I have a home, our children, are going to sit down at the kitchen table and eat their cookie. Because I'm not about to waste my time going after them, sweeping up the crumbs. Or my house looks messy, you know, the rest of the day. So there's some things that I do just work on not allowing some things that they can eat a cookie at the kitchen table just as well as walking through the house. And that does save me in picking up and cleaning. And you'll find other things too as you think through on these things. I think that a lot of us can save time in our kitchens by analyzing where we have things and are they the most convenient? Are they at the most convenient spot? How much time do we waste? For instance, in opening a can, I always wipe off the top of my can before I open it. So I want to have my can opener right by my sink. Whereas if I have a can opener on the other side of the kitchen, well, I'm wasting steps by going from the sink where I wipe off the top of the can over to where I finally end up opening it up. And the items that we use the most, the mixer, is it, do we have it accessible? Or do we have to move things, a lot of things, to get to it? Or our toaster that we use every morning. Is it just really in a convenient spot? So this is something that we can all think through on. And it's a challenge, really, to try to be just as organized and time-saving as we can be. Because then if we can cut down, you know, our work by time and motion, well, then we'll have, maybe we can have 5 minutes or 15 minutes extra for reading or, you know, what we would like to do. Are there any questions or comments you'd like to make on what we've touched on so far?
Hmm? Well, my only thought is that I'm the worst offender in the trouble there is.
Well, like, for instance, when I come in the room, I come in the house and I go in the bedroom to hang up my coat, I make myself hang it up in my closet right then. Because the time that's involved in taking it off and getting to my closet is just the same as the time involved in taking it off and laying it on my bed, where I'm going to have to pick it up eventually and put it in the closet.
I wonder about the process of training our children and our husband to do this would become nagging. Is it something we shouldn't do either?
Well, I think we can work with our children so it isn't nagging. So I think they can be taught that to appreciate a picked-up room and a picked-up home. See, and then it just leaves you your husband to pick up after.
Reminds me of my high schooler. Last week she was with two other little girls, and she is finally there to pick up after herself, and the other two have not. And she says, "You're just like my sister. You deserve each other. You should let me go all the time." That's really what a reasonable
remark. That's right. They soon notice it when they work on it themselves and are worked with by their parents.
I think also in being organized, it just depends how large a house or an apartment you have. You live in an apartment that's not too big, and we got married a year ago, and we got many presents, and it's very difficult for me to know where to put everything. Mm-hmm. But then there again, you have to put in, you know, things that you use the most.
Yes.
In the kitchen, I mean, puts other things in there.
That's right, for when you get a larger home. Well, we can go into shopping. And this is one area where you want to save both time and money. And the basic way, of course, in saving time and money in shopping is not to forget things. If we can solve that one, we pretty well have it made. How do we lose money when we forget things. Maybe this will help us.
Violent.
Pardon?
Impulse buying. That means you don't need.
Now, why is this true?
Because when you go back the second time, you say, oh, that looks good.
The least I have to go in a store, the least I'll buy. That's right. Okay, we end up buying what we don't need. How else do we waste or lose money? By forgetting things.
Transportation.
Good.
Going again, for taking the bus again.
Right. Transportation money. When we forget something, say at our regular shopping run, which is at a supermarket or something like that, and we come home and we find, oh, we forgot to get some brown sugar. So we send our children down to the corner grocery store to get it. And generally, what is the price difference? Quite a bit higher. So in that respect, we're out money. And then of course, we lose and waste time just by the extra time that this sort of thing consumes. Well, one way that I've worked on this throughout the years, I certainly haven't arrived completely, is particularly in grocery shopping. I used to just open up a cupboard, and I knew pretty much what I had in the cupboard, and I'd, you know, test the boxes. Well, I got enough brown sugar for the week. I got enough tea bags for the week, and so forth. But it wasn't foolproof. There were still things that I overlooked. So, in desperation, I made up myself a list of pretty much the items that I use regularly. And I have them listed under paper products, breakfast items, lunch items, and then I have staples. And then I have produce, meats, vegetables, frozen items, canned fruits, the dog, laundry items. And I make myself go over this each week when I make out my grocery list. And this has pretty much solved my problem in not forgetting things. Because it's all down here. What I would use. Now, if I run out of a rare spice or a seasoning or something like that during the week, well, then I'll write it down on my bulletin board. I don't have, you know, every item on here.
Do you check each item from
that list? Paper towels, large napkins, sandwich bags, lunch bags, toilet paper, wax paper. Oh, maybe 15 minutes.
Do you just kind of take it with you around the kitchen?
Uh-huh.
And just kind of look at it?
And with a 3x5.
Do you plan all your menus ahead? How do you shop
today? No, I don't now. I used to when I was first married, and we had a house full. We had six fellows living with us. Then I did, because I didn't have the background in cooking. But the way most of us live now with freezers and so forth, why, if I have, say, I have the basic meats that I normally cook with in my freezer, hamburger, stew meat, roast, ham, pork chops, well, then then on each day, well, then I can determine according to who's going to be there for dinner, you know, my number for dinner that I'll take out from the freezer.
So you just kind of do it day by day.
Mm-hmm.
You have to buy those things ahead.
Mm-hmm. Right. Uh-huh.
Do you buy them when they're just on sale?
Well, one of the things that I think we all want to work toward in our shopping is buying the weekend specials. And the advantage of, rather, when on your schedule, you'll want to plan your weekend grocery shopping for the weekend, because that's when the specials are on.
One thing, when I would buy like meat on a weekend special, oftentimes it was maybe hamburger 3 pounds for something. Well, just Frank and I, when would we use 3 pounds of hamburger?
Mm-hmm.
But I would get the three,
mm-hmm.
and then before I would freeze it, I would break it down into pound packages or half pound packages, so mm-hmm. that if it were just Frank and I, I'd pull out a half pound. If we're going to have 2 guests, I'd pull out a pound. If there are going to be 6 of us, I'd grab several, but I could still take advantage of the special but not have to thaw the whole thing at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Just an apartment-sized freezer is all we have.
Mm-hmm.
You mean in the refrigerator?
Yeah, the top of the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a certain amount of money that you spend every time you go grocery shopping?
Well, of course, my situation is different right now. But, of course, we live here at Glen Eyrie. We live over there in the pink house, and I get my meat through the castle here. But when we lived in Oakland, California, before we came here, and I wasn't budgeted down to, you know, the last penny, but I had a pretty round figure that I went by.
Because I think in a... I have a certain amount that I spend every week, and I go shopping once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, you have that list there, and there might be certain things that you need, and certainly, you know, at times I run out of many things.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do then is to pick out the things that I really need, and then leave the others to next week that I have
yes.
more money in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I found that you can tell from the stores in an area certain things go on sale at certain times. And the one thing I did is baked all of our bread that we had. And so I knew that I used 15 pounds of flour in a month. And my husband is one that got paid once a month as a teacher.
Yeah.
Or I used 20 pounds a month. Well, I'd wait, and I knew that it was sometime during that month. And so when that week came, I'd buy 20 pounds, 4 bags of flour.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, that would take me through, but I could get it for the sale price rather than, you know, it would get me, I could get it on sale. This was last year for 39 cents for 5 pounds. Well, normally it's 79, and that would just kill me if I had to pay 79 cents for
it. Well, I think I find, like, I love to get my cake mixes in Detroit rather than Chicago or anything else, because the great Scott there, and Dunkin' Lines were 29 cents. But in Chicago, you can't touch them for less than 30 cents.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to bring, like, 6 chocolate cake mixes at a time when I go home. But then I had to come up storing it, you know, and if my kitchen cupboard just doesn't hold that much.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a little bit of a frustration to me. As to
yes. Now, wherever we have lived, we have worked on this pantry storage problem. And my husband is, fortunately, of course, is very conservative-minded, as I am. And in the basement, he has rigged up shelves for me. Or out in the garage, we have put shelves for storage. But I have found that if we have wanted something bad enough, that we can work it out. There is a solution.
The problem of putting things in the basement, though, don't you find that it's in our basement anyway, it's very
Well, now there, we had that problem too. I would put the canned goods in the basement and use where I would have the canned goods normally. You know, I'd have some up in the kitchen. Well, I would use that then for my extra.
Would that affect the cake mixes, for instance?
Oh, yes, yes. You wouldn't want to put flour or such as that where it was damp.
In the apartment, though, you wouldn't have... You have to, have as much space as you do in the home.
Yes, definitely. I had the privilege of living with Mr. and Mrs. Trotman. I'm sure you've heard their names referred to this week, Dawson and Lila Trotman. And I worked for Lila in her home. And one of the comments she made once that has remained with me has been that whenever Dawson needed something, she made it a lifelong practice for him not to have to remind her, but just tell her once. So if your husband mentions he's just about out of shaving cream, well, get a 3x5 and start your shopping list and write down shaving cream. Or if you notice that the kids need shoelaces, well, then add shoelaces to the shaving cream. And so what you're doing is you're keeping a running shopping list during the week. So you won't forget when you go to the store. This also solves a lot of irritation problems that can be caused by our forgetting things, if we really work on it and don't forget. With our husbands and our children, you know, because they did tell us. How much longer do we have? Should we be quitting or?
2 minutes.
All right. I feel that there are, I've got 5 money savers here in grocery shopping. I'm sure we aren't going to be able to get to them. But one is quantity buying, which Patty touched on. Quantity buying. But, yes, just yesterday I went down and I made a special trip to the store just to get this point. Your salt shaker, salt shakers, or you're buying your salt, you have a choice of 3 different sizes. You get your round shaker about this size. That is 12 ounces for 13 cents. Or you can buy your pound and a half container, which is this size, for... That's 26 ounces for 11 and a half cents. Or you can buy a 5-pound bag of salt, or 80 ounces. 80 ounces of salt for 25 cents. Now, what I do is wherever I go to set up housekeeping, I will buy, say, the size container of salt that I want in my cupboard, if it's this size or this size. So I get the container. But then, from then on, I will buy the 5-pound bag of salt, and I buy me a little funnel, and I keep this filled up from my 5-pound bag of salt. Because this is a staple. Salt is a staple item that you're always going to be using. And I find that I can save quite a bit.
Do you go to many different stores all the time and compare the prices a lot? I mean, you might get salt from this in one store and then sugar.
Well, only if it works out. And say for just you and your apartment living, I don't know that I would suggest it unless, say, there were two stores right close together. Maybe in one had specials on stewing hens that weekend and the other had specials on hamburger. You know, maybe you'd want to take advantage of both of them. But right, right. That's what I mean. Okay. Number two, shopping saver, is what we pretty well we've gone over this to a little bit. Take advantage of weekend specials. Weekend specials. Now, in order to take advantage of the special, you have to know your prices to begin with, or you might not be saving any money at all. And in canned goods, for instance, which usually they offer in their grocery ads each week, there are six for a dollar, seven for a dollar, maybe eight for a dollar. Well, I have memorized how much six for a dollar is. This means 16 2/3 cents a can. So, I will say they're offering peat, six for a dollar. Why not? Well, that's 16 2/3 cents a can. Well, I'll look on the counter, and I'll see if there are any less than 16 2/3. And if there are, well, then I know not to take, this really isn't a special. Seven for a dollar runs you 14 2/3 a can. And so if they're offering, say, this on beets, well, then I'll look on the counter and see if maybe they're offering 3 for 39, which would naturally be 13 cents in comparison to 14 2/3 cents. Or your 8 for a dollar might be tomato sauce, which runs 12 1/2 cents. And maybe another brand of tomato sauce on the counter is 10 cents. So we just can't buy blindly and expect to come out ahead. Then another is avoid the ready-mades. And a good illustration of this is, for instance, rice. I mentioned this to a friend of mine once, and she said, I always just use some... It isn't instant rice.
Minute rice.
Because sometimes I just, you know, want a quick meal. Well, I found really that any meal that I'm going to make, I'll at least be in the kitchen for a half hour before mealtime, even if it is a real quickie. And that is the time that's needed for regular rice. So I really don't see any particular advantage in buying minute rice. And this is the price difference. 14 ounces of instant rice is 49 cents and 12 servings. 2 pounds of regular rice, or 32 ounces, is 37 cents and 16 servings. And which is better, nutrition-wise? The regular. Your prepackaged bleach is something else. You know, I won't take the time to write it down. Ready-to-use packeted bleach, 22 ounces, 89 cents. 1 gallon of regular bleach, you get 128 ounces for 65 cents. A 10-ounce box of plain frozen vegetable, say it's 10 ounces... peas would be 20 cents. If you buy this buttered, you pay 10 ounces peas, 39 cents. I figured that I can add the margarine to it. So in this day and age, we really can still save money if we work at it. Another thing that I think we have to overcome in our shopping is warped ideas that we have or that we carry from our background. I was talking with a lady. She had bought a jacket for her daughter out at the discount house. And it didn't prove to be too good a buy. And she never was going to do any more shopping at that discount house. Well, I thought it was sort of silly myself, because I don't buy clothes at a discount house. But I buy lots of other things there. Household items, appliances, toiletries, vitamins. And you save good amounts. But she was not going to ever go in that door again. Then warped ideas, that's number four. And five would be impulsive buying. We think we need something, so we go right down and buy it. We had a girl who worked for us. She needed one of these plastic bags, plastic garment bags, you know, when you go traveling to hang your clothes in. So she went downtown and she bought one at a real nice department store for $5. Well, John, my husband, just went completely up in there. You paid $5 for a plastic garment bag? So you take that back. And you wait until the next time that we go out to the discount house, and then you buy one there. Well, she went through the humbling ordeal of taking it back and waited a week or so when we were planning a trip to the discount house, and she bought a good one for a dollar and a half. But she learned. And today she's a wise shopper. Okay, I think we better quit.